Tiger, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Program meant to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you have a more positively, more sensitive life. Just being aware of yourself. You know, sometimes you're a dead giveaway to yourself without even knowing it. Idiopathic craniofacial erythema, we're going to talk about today. Idiopathic craniofacial erythema. Many of you have felt this. Idiopathic craniofacial erythema is a condition called blushing. That's what blushing is all about. What is blushing about? Blushing is just like this flood of blood that comes to your face, and it usually accompanies embarrassment and shame. Well, shame is such an interesting thing because I've been looking at some of the statistics and the misunderstandings of suicide lately. And what seems to be at the basis of almost all suicide is shame. So I think we have to understand it a little better. There's embarrassment and there's shame. Imagine you're in an elevator and you burp or you pass gas or something like that in a crowded elevator, right? And then you look around like who did that? Who did that? You know, what do you feel? Is that shame or is that embarrassment? Well, the difference between shame and embarrassment is kind of a social kind of violation at the moment where, you know, oh, all of a sudden your skirt blows above your head or somehow your fly is open and you're embarrassed, you know. But shame goes much deeper. Here's a question. If you were on an island, a desert island, and there was nobody there, no other humans, just animals and plants, could you feel shame? It's an interesting thing to ponder. Remember yesterday we were talking about questions and how questions sometimes, if you leave them hanging in the air, they teach you things. Well, here's a question. If nobody were around to be accountable to, would you ever feel shame? Therefore, if shame is at the basis of most suicide, and shame or the sense that somebody is judging you is at the basis of most suicide, how does that work? How does it work? How does that happen? In Afghanistan, even the poorest families in Afghanistan are filled because it's the women, Afghan women, frequently kill themselves by setting themselves on fire. Yes, on fire. They do it because of shame. And there's a lot of shame for women in Afghanistan. Lots and lots of shame. It is shameful to admit troubles at home. Depression is shameful. People suffer. Afghan women are extraordinarily restricted. Their family is their fate. There's little chance for education, little choice about whom a woman marries. No choice at all about the role in her house. Her primary job is to serve her husband's family. If you run away from home, you may be raped or put in jail and then sent home. And what happens to you when you get home? The shame, this was a report from the Human Rights Watch. Returned runaways are often shot or stabbed right on the spot because their family fear they have spent unchaperoned time with a man. Women and girls are still stoned to death to this day. So what women will do very often is if they feel a sense of shame or they feel like they're in, they will burn themselves to death. And they think, many of them think that if you set yourself on fire, because that's what's available, they don't have weapons, they don't have other ways of doing it. And so a large number of women are doing this. And very often what's at the basis of it is a sense of shame. One of the women they interviewed had gone to a party where she had forgotten a gift. And as a result of giving the gift, she was shamed. She was told that she was really no good. She went home and she set herself on fire. And the doctors in the hospital say this happens a lot. Well, wait a minute, folks. Hold on a second. Do you ever feel shame? Let's look at the way people manage shame in our culture. There's a way of looking at it. You know, you could figure maybe three different ways. One way that you handle shame, and most people handle shame, is the way that we kind of see it in the cartoons. You know, you want to hide. You want to run into a hole and hide your head. You don't want to see people. You want to bow your head down. Shame is like wishing you could disappear. You know, wishing that nobody would ever see you, because it's about other people judging you. It's about this feeling that you are not a good human, that you're a bad human, that you're an inadequate human, an incapable human. So one way that people manage feelings of shame is they withdraw. Well, it makes sense. You withdraw. You hold back. That's the top. So very often when you see people who are phobic, you know, if there's one condition, social phobia. And the cornerstone of social phobia, or one of the key elements of social phobia, if you ask somebody, are you afraid that you will do something in public and embarrass yourself? And when the person says yes, I am afraid I will be embarrassed. That's social phobia. At the basis of social phobia is embarrassment. So much so that a person is so afraid that they will do something to bring shame on themselves that they just don't go out. That's the withdrawal. The other way to do it is to attack. One way to attack is you attack yourself. You attack yourself, you beat yourself over the head, you call yourself stupid, you feel you get ridiculous, or you attach yourself to somebody of power who you believe can redeem you by taking care of you. That's self-attack. The other way that people deal with shame is they attack other people. And very often, you will see people who are shameful. And what they'll do in their response to shame is they'll attack people. They'll become vicious. See? And you become vicious. There's one other way of handling shame, and that's alcohol. You know, alcohol and shame are perfect. Alcohol wipes away the feeling of shame better than any other drug that's ever been found. Better than cocaine, better than amphetamines. One of the reasons that people do cocaine a great deal and drugs is because they're trying to escape a sense of responsibility. One of the ways that people sometimes try to treat them is you go over to them and you make them feel guilty. How could you do this to your family? Well, that's no good. It just sends them on to more stuff and eventually to the alcohol. And the alcohol, part of the reason that I believe alcohol is so popular and we have so many bars and we have so many different kinds of liquor, is because we're filled with this feeling of shame. That's what we're really seeing. There's a library of ways we behave when we don't know anything we can do that can make the feeling of shame decrease. So we diminish somebody else sometimes, at least we're going to feel better. But here's the other thing that folks do when they feel a great deal of shame. They attack their children, their spouse, their inferiors, their underlings. How serious could this be? There is a level of shame where when you feel it, you can't take anymore. And what you do at that point, almost invariably, with the exception of illness and advanced age, most people who commit suicide do so out of a sense of shame. That's an important danger signal. Let's take a look at how that manifests. The Japanese culture. Japan's a country of extremes. One can experience here an amazing juxtaposition of the ancient traditions with ultra-modern technologies. Neither any introduction nor an endorsement as brand Japanese is often associated to quality goods in the world. But how about the life of the Japanese people? This question requires a thorough look on several aspects. The benchmark set by Japanese society are very high. One of them being the fact that Japan has one of the highest suicide rates among rich countries. Japan, as a country, has everything, more than many unfortunate countries in the world, yet so many of its citizens decide to die every year. During the first 6 months of 2006, there was the number of people who have committed suicide. Let me just see, where's the statistic? I had this here. The suicide rate per 1,000 people, so per 100,000 people in Japan was 20 out of 100,000, whereas in Italy it's 5. Four times as many Japanese people commit suicide as do Italian people. What could that difference be? That Italians have no shame? Well, you know, come to think of it, think about the Japanese and the work ethic. Their intense work ethic. When you get a product that's made in Japan, it's usually a fine, fine product. You know, it's about that work ethic, and they're stuck with that ethic. Half of the people who commit suicide in Japan are unemployed. So unemployment is a real danger. And there goes a shame that goes with that. One Japanese commits suicide every 15 minutes. Most suicides are committed by the teens and people under 30 years of age. And most of the Japanese, strangely enough, commit suicide using easily accessible household items. You know, they don't shoot themselves. They don't do something like that. It's almost like you have to kind of really pay for being alive and being such a bad person. So what makes that? What makes that happen? What makes this culture of incredible... The fact that almost 50% of the suicides are committed by unemployed Japanese indicates the economic aspect of the problem. When we have a high suicide, when we have a high rate of unemployment, we don't think the consequence of that is people are going to kill themselves. Because in a lot of countries, they don't. But in Japan, it means a great deal. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Why are we talking about it? Because I want to talk about shame and its effect on people. I have questions about things that are common beliefs related to shame. I have a kind of the most scary one is that the concern we have over the rising troop suicides, soldiers who come back from the Iraq war. Every day, 5 U.S. soldiers try to kill themselves. 5. Before the Iraq war began, that figure was less than 1 suicide a day. So it's 5 times what it used to be. In 2007 alone, 2,100 soldiers tried to commit suicide. In 2008, it was over 3,000. In 2009, I think it was 5,000. Suicide attempts are rising and have risen over the last 5 years. The troops and the families are under unprecedented levels of stress due to the pace and frequency of more than 5 years of deployments. But what makes a soldier kill himself when he gets back? What is it? He's being honored. He's got a job. He gets all kinds of goodies. Why would he do it? What happens to the mind? And what happens to the human mind is that I'm not going to say the stress of war, but maybe that when you have to kill, somewhere inside is a hidden sense of shame. Post-traumatic stress disorder might be considered post-traumatic shame disorder. What's it like to be a killer of other humans? What's it like? I'm not passing judgment, but what's it like? What does it do to your heart? What does it do to your soul to know that that's what you're doing? That's what you've been trained to do. And when you come back and you see people being nice, last year's more than 5 a day, more than 7 a day. The more that we stay at war, the more that we are coming back. So this is Armand DeMille with you. I want to ask you about shame. I want to ask you people about shame and about what it means to you. And, of course, we're going to take your calls as we normally do at 212-209-2900. Have you ever felt shame beyond embarrassment? Is shame at the basis of shame? Does it have something to do with our parents and how our parents feel about us? Does something bring us back to being little kids? God. The intense public shame and humiliation, known suicide triggers, in Australia, that's it, this is in Australia, 2,500 people die from suicide each year in Australia, with men in the 25 to 44 group most at risk. For every person who actually kills themselves, 8 people try it. So the number is much higher. All right, now let's talk about illness. If you get to the end of your life and you say, okay, there's nothing left for me to do. If you get to the point of despair and you say, all right, look, I'm sick, I'm not feeling good, I don't have much family around, let me pull the plug on myself. That's one idea. If you have a living will and you write in your living will, should I get so sick that I can't continue, please pull the plug on me. I fully understand. Your life is your own. You know what I mean? If you're going to live miserable and that's what you choose to do and you don't have a belief that says you shouldn't do it, you know, the interesting thing about religion is I know Catholicism traps you. It says you're done. Because if you die and you believe in an afterlife, if you commit suicide, you're going straight to hell. That's like kind of, oof, now what do I do? You know, I guess I'll drink. What am I going to do? I can't commit suicide because I'll go to hell, but I can't stay on earth because I feel like I'm in hell. So I guess I'll drink. That's what I'll do. So it's kind of a trap. But, you know, most people who commit suicide have some form of mental problem, but of course they do. They can't handle it. They feel inadequate. They feel shameful. They feel like the world is too big for me. This world is not meant for me. I should be able to handle why did my checks bounce? You know, why did I get caught like this? Why did I commit this problem? What's the matter with me? And so much self-blame that eventually you want to quit. You know? And you say, it's got to be easier than this. It does have to be easier than this. But I'll tell you something, friends. It is easier than this. It is easier than all of your worries, than all of your beliefs, than all of your shame. Whatever you have is happening in your mind, most of you, it's easier than you think. Because the problem is your mind is just thinking about problems all the time. It's much easier to get by in life than you think it is. The poorest people in the world get by. You know, we're all connected on some level, but you don't know it. You feel isolated, and shame makes you feel isolated. Let's take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille, 212.
Not yet.
212-209-2900. So we're going to be taking your calls, and I'd like to talk to you, but I would also like to continue our discussion about the last 2 days, about the questions that we've been asking. You know, the questions about, what is the question underneath it all? Like, let's take a look at this thing called post-traumatic stress disorder. What's the question underneath it? We're saying, oh, you go to war and stress is so big and so hard that it makes you feel so tense that when you come back from war, what happens to you? You depressurize or your mind gets screwed on differently? What happens to you? And what's that like? How much pressure is it that would make you then wake up as if in a dream and say, I think I'll kill myself? How does that work? I'm a shrink. I mean, I can make up ideas. It's nice that we have this word called post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a word. We made up the word so we could invent a drug to treat it. You know, so a chemical company could treat it. Let's take one of your calls. Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there. Oops, I had somebody there, but I think the phone fell off.
No, he hung up. Let's move on.
Okay, I'm ready.
Hi there. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
That's a great phrase. I love that, I'm ready. You know, I think we should say that every morning when you wake up. When the first place you go where you're going to run into people, you should say, I'm ready. Like when you're ready to get into the subway, I'm ready.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. Hi there. Go ahead. Hi there.
Okay. Shall I start talking or not?
Yes, you start talking.
Okay. I just wanted to call in. I listened to the discussion. I'm on the road, and it really resonated. I've always had this theory, which I'll quickly run out for you. You're really onto something with that shame thing. You know, where it comes from, it comes from lots of places. But, I mean, that's a whole long discussion. Childhood is usually, I think, the most common. But I found that I have to be an alcoholic in recovery. And I went many, many years not drinking alcohol. And it was a real challenge to find ways to punish myself because I still felt the shame. And I used to use cigarettes, oddly enough.
When you say the shame, what do you mean by the shame? What
the shame was, the feelings that you're describing of inadequacy, dark secret, undefined dark secret. People really don't like you. People really don't want you around.
The beauty, pardon me for interrupting you, the beauty of being the program, I'm sure you've been in a couple of programs, right?
Yeah.
Like AA, the beauty of the programs is other people sitting up there and saying the same thing makes you not feel the shame as giant as it felt because you were so alone.
Yeah, I mean, the common denominator helps, but my point was going to be that I have discovered something which I think is really very, very simple, and that is that behavior is sort of the key. In other words, a lot of people chase spirituality and God and blah, 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 and there are lots of other avenues, but I find the simplest approach is when I was back feeling that shame, I would act out in negative ways. I would do things to myself which reinforced those feelings of shame. Now, what I've found is that my behavior really produces my feelings about myself. So therefore, if I simply stick to positive behavior, reinforcing behavior, doing what I think is the right thing, feeling good about myself at the end of the day, no shame or very little shame. And I just wanted to kind of reduce it to behavior because it can get very complicated when it stays up in my head.
Well, that's very good. What's your name?
My name is Bill.
Hey, Bill, let me ask you something. So from what you learned of yourself, there's a correlation I make between shame and alcohol. How does a drink reduce the shame? How does it feel? Just describe it to me.
What's the relationship between shame and alcohol?
No, just what's it feel like? Not what's the theoretical relationship, but let's say you're feeling this kind of inadequate, miserable feeling about yourself. When you take a shot of booze, you know, whatever it is, let's say Jack Daniels, straight up, and you...
I think that, you know, it's broader than that. You come into this process with shame, and then you treat it. In other words, self-medication is much wider than
Bill, I'm asking you to talk about yourself for a minute.
Alcohol, yeah.
When you took a shot of booze.
Yeah, at my peak, I used alcohol to treat the feelings. You know,
and how did
simple.
It work? Here's what I'm asking you, if you don't
how
mind. Slow down. How did it work? What was it like to feel terrible? Slow down. Let me just finish my sentence, okay? So you're sitting at a bar.
Okay.
Or you're sitting somewhere and you have this feeling, and then boom, you take a shot. I want to know, just give me this. What was the feeling like with that first shot of alcohol?
Well, I mean, it certainly masked over the feelings of shame.
Is it like a feeling of bliss for a moment? Is it a feeling of warmth?
I don't think. I think, I mean, my feeling about that question is that you're talking about a physical process.
Talk about even the physical process.
Yeah, it's just it shuts down the neurotransmitters, and you don't feel, whatever. You feel free. You feel
okay.
You feel okay.
I, Bill, would have felt free. I would have gotten this one moment of okay, and that's what it did for me. Thank you. That's very important.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. Good luck. It's a good discussion.
And thank you for your cooperation and help.
Okay. Take care.
212-209-2900. Very important to talk about yourself rather than talking about a preaching about people in general, because I don't know about people. But I do know people know about themselves. They could kind of teach me a lot. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I wasn't privy to the phone call before.
Uh-huh.
I heard your last sentence talking about people really doing all themselves.
Yes.
I don't know how much I can say more than 100% that I disagree with you on that one.
What do you disagree with?
First of all, I don't think people know their history. I don't think they don't know the history of this planet.
But do you know yours? This is what I was asking.
The question is not about me.
I'm sorry. The question I asked.
You asked me a question about whether or not people really know themselves.
I didn't ask that question.
I said the majority of people do not know themselves.
Wait, I didn't ask that question.
Okay. And so I'm not here to talk about myself.
Oh, you see, but
I'm
that's
talking
what...
about, I'm here to talk about why they've been to world wars, why there's been wars over, for 10,000 years, maybe more, who knows how long.
Yeah, but pardon me for
the
just a moment.
The fact that people don't know their rulership, they don't know the history of their rulership, they have no idea what their agendas are.
Sure, I understand that completely. Could you hold on just one minute?
I understand that completely. But
could you hold on a minute, please?
I just want. Hold on.
You're not hearing me. Okay.
I know, but
what I'm
trying to
say to you is,
time I have.
What I'm inviting people to do is to talk about themselves, not to come on air and talk about society and people in general. That's my invitation. Although what you have to say is very important. I'm asking specifically about people's experience. So I have great respect for what you have to say, except it's not appropriate for the moment because I'm asking for people's experience of themselves.
Would you like to know? Okay, great. I can talk about my experience if you'd like to.
Yeah, I would love you to talk about yourself.
I was prepared to do that because, I couldn't listen to the discussion beforehand.
Oh, you couldn't hear it before because you must have been on, standby?
I was on standby and the radio was off.
Okay, then that's great. Now listen, what's your first name?
My first name is Rob.
Ralph?
Robert.
Robert, could you do me a favor? We have to take a short break because it's just around 1:30 here at WBAI. Could you hold on air? And then when we get done with our break, we're going to pick up right with you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your respect. We're going to take a short break. And when we... when we come back, I'm going to play a little music, something very brief. And then when we come back after that, we're going to continue with Robert, who's going to talk about himself as opposed to talking about what he perceives. Because talking about what we perceive, everybody can do that. But where I learn is I learn from each of you. I learn from you as individuals. And I think you're all great. And I think Robert has plenty to offer. And I think we're going to hear from that in just a couple of minutes. So we're going to take a short break, and I'll be right back with you.
No, Robert, just stand by. After we finish the music, we'll come to you, okay?
From now on, there'll be a change in me. Walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me's going to be the same. Change my long gone for a little short back. Change my number where I'm stopping at. When you're old and gray, there'll be some changes made today. There'll be some changes made.
Thank you.
be a change in me? What will be different, my talk and my name? Nothing about me's gonna be the same. Change my long tone for a little short fat. Change my number where I'm stopping at. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There'll be some changes made today, yeah. There'll be some changes. Oh, some changes made. Oh, baby, there'll be some changes made.
That's Jimmy Rushing. And with Dave Brubeck on piano, by the way, the Dave Brubeck, Jimmy Rushing album, a great album. We have Robert standing by. I wanted to play that in particular for you because we are going through some changes. This is, for the time being, the last Thursday that we will be broadcasting The Positive Mind and WBAI from here on after. It'll be Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And this is a change that the station has gone through. Those of you who listen only on Thursdays, I'm sorry. You're going to have to find a way to listen through the archives or go through it, because you could always go to the Positive Mind or WBAI.org and listen to the archive program, which we keep up there. So it's just Thursday. That's all it is. And there are changes made, and changes make life very different. Now I'm going to return to a very, very brave man, Robert, who had something to teach us in general. But I asked him, Robert, could you do me a favor and teach me from your life, from you? And he said he certainly will stand by and be happy to talk about that. Robert, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still
there. Oh, good. I'm glad you're there. Thanks for bearing with me and my music and everything else in the break.
I love jazz.
So tell me about you. Tell me. Tell me what you know about shame.
I believe that the beginning of the discussion was about suicide.
Yeah.
And
did you ever get near that, Robert?
Yeah, of course.
Many times. I mean, not many people do that, but you've gotten close to it.
It's my opinion that most people think about it. But they're simply just too afraid to go through it, don't understand themselves.
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't find that to be true. I don't see many people think about it, but frustration is tough. I'm a shrink, you know, so I talk to people, and I don't see suicide as many of their options. But it is something to think about, because when things get rough and you've had this constant thought in your mind over and over again, it means you must have felt like really there was just no way to turn. And, you know, life is an option.
Yeah, life is the better option. But in order to that, you have to be responsible about the things that are happening around you. And that's pretty much a challenge for a lot of people.
Well, you must be very brave to confront this world after having seen the option over and over again of ending your life. You must have some gullions to come back and say over and over again, well, I'm going to face it. Brave man, Robert, brave man.
What it means is that there's one less person available to make a change in this world. So as far as I'm concerned, that's just copping out. So, you know, I'm not attacking people who commit suicide.
Well, neither am I,
people,
but you know, you do.
People who commit suicide are in a lot of pain.
Yeah, and you do remind me of something, Robert, because you're right. You are verbal, intelligent, you are articulate, and you have an ability to communicate with people. And for that very reason, you are one of the people that could help people through this life. And you're right. You go, and there's one less person in this army of help. So I really take what you say very seriously. Thank you for sticking around.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'll continue?
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, okay. That's certainly true. There's a lot of things going on around us that are apparently our fault. If we took the time out to take a good look at the things around us and look at the history that is being lied to us.
Well, you're back to the us.
To us.
Wait. You just left the me, and you went to the us. Yes.
Yeah, because
but
we
I know,
are
I know.
Us.
I understand
and,
that.
Oh, you know, I am them.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Masses are literally one, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Robert, I thank you very much. I understand what you're saying, and I thank you very much for the contribution that you have made, because you said something very important here. You said if you took yourself out, there would be one less of us to fight for what's right, and I thank you very much for that. So I want to thank you for calling in and staying with us.
Okay.
Keep listening. 212-209-2900. You know, of all the places that I did not see shame where you would expect to have seen it, Bernie Madoff, when he was arrested, when he was caught stealing everybody's money and moving everybody's money around, if you looked at him, I said to myself, how could they be arresting him and putting him in prison without taking away his belt and his shoelaces? Because he had no shame. He was like, all right, that's what I did. And maybe the difference between the ones who scare me and the ones who don't scare me is the ones who have no sense of guilt whatsoever or responsibility. Now, I don't like shame. I think shame is too big. But I do love having a sense of responsibility for your fellow man, like our good friend Robert Hass. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Thanks for waiting.
Oh, thank you.
What's your name?
Angela.
Angela, you have such a delightful voice. You sound like you're alert and alive and a happy person.
Oh, that's interesting, because I'm drinking as we speak.
You're drinking alcohol as we speak.
Yes, and I did try to commit suicide.
And so at the moment,
in March.
At the moment, you're beyond your pain because you're drinking.
Yes.
And see,
but it's not working. I'm actually just, but I want to tell you why.
Tell me.
Okay. My, people in this country.
No, talk about
you. No, okay, but I got sued when the person I was with for 13 years, I've been on disability because I'm somebody who's not, it's like an antisocial thing. So Manhattan is really a place that I love. I adore, because I can go outside, I can just, like...
Okay, Angela,
conversations with it. And now, what happens is, the ex-wife sues me when he dies for the life insurance policy. My government tells me I'm not worth anything. They award her the $100,000 life insurance policy, and then they only give me 6 months to pay it after they drag it out for 7 years. So my mom puts a reverse mortgage on a house. Now I'm like, I'm finally going to get to go back to Manhattan. And what is my landlord doing? My landlord's evicting me because I haven't been here.
Angela. Hold on a second. Hold back. Angela, that's tough stuff. You know?
I'm not allowed to live on this freaking planet.
Well, that's not true. Let me tell you what life. I have been through so many hurdles in this life that what you're talking about seems tiny. And there are there are people who have been through such stuff that what we're talking about is small stuff. Being sued, that's small. That's baby stuff. The big stuff comes later, but you're a teacher. We need you around here. You're smart. You're intelligent. You get through this and you're going to be like Mother Teresa. You're going to be... So come on, sweetie. You know, join the League of Humans. Join
really?
Us. You'll get through this. Who needs Manhattan anyway? The Bronx is beautiful. Angela.
Well, I guess I would say it's the feeling, you know, like when you say that with the alcohol. It was interesting because that's what my husband died of. He died of alcoholism. And it was just brutal. Family cord, never got to see his kid.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you one more thing before we separate, okay, Angela?
Okay.
Brutal is one thing, but unfortunately, the swing, the roller coaster that the alcohol takes you on by bringing you there and back and there and back, it never seems to get off. But we need you, Kitty. We need you on this team. Would you please get yourself to a couple of meetings, get yourself straight, and then call me up and say, okay, I'm back. I'll welcome you with open arms either way, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
212-209-2900. I knew it was going to be a sensitive subject because, you know, it's like it's a funny thing. There's such a privacy to people's thought about their own lives, but so many people consider it. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, do you have idiopathic craniofacial erythema? That means do you blush? Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hi there, I can hear you. Well, there's somebody on the air there, but it's hard to hear.
Oh, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I certainly can hear you.
Okay.
Your name?
Pretty much growing up, my father pretty much always told me I was worth nothing.
Yeah,
I would never
terrible.
Amount to anything, and pretty much I grew up that way.
What's your name? What's your name?
Fred.
Fred, that's terrible. You know, sometimes dads, there's a guy I know, there's a psychologist I know who teaches people. He says, you know, there are some dads who try to kill their children by squelching them. They're so afraid that somebody like Fred's going to come along and beat them that they keep putting them down and putting them down. You sound like you were one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much grew up, I never had any kind of relationship with humans, you know, with a person. Always pretty much been alone and lost my job at 10 years, and now I'm unemployed and looking like I'm going to be homeless. So it's like, I felt like, well, I deserve this.
What do you mean you deserve this, Fred? Why?
Because my father pretty much instilled in me since I was born that I'm worth nothing. So
but your father wasn't worth very much, you know. He was a pretty poor father. I mean, as fathers go, I'd still take you over him any day. Because I know you. You're a loving guy. See? You would never do what he did. So you would never do that to a child, would you?
No.
So then why do you do that to yourself? Because the child, Fred, is looking for Big Fred to say, it's okay, kitty, we're going to get through. So, Fred, I think you're beautiful. I think you should put an arm around Fred himself and say, whatever it is, we're going to get through it. Just like Angela's going to get through it. You know,
right.
It's tough out there, but we're strong.
Yeah.
You're a good guy, Fred. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Let's get another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I was thinking of shame and alcohol as well, but For me, because I have tried to attempt suicide when I was younger several times. Mm. But both my parents had died, both of them, and they left me with a great aunt who used to abuse me. She used to beat me with an ironing cord, rubber hose. She wouldn't have stopped until she drew blood. And then she used to have me more as a servant around the house than her child.
Wow. What's your name? What's your name?
Catherine.
Catherine, you know, so there you are proving my point that mm-hmm. there is a sense you had. They had this sense of telling you you're worthless, you shouldn't be alive.
Yes.
And then
yes.
what we do is we believe it.
Yes. Yeah. After a while, you come to believe it.
Yeah.
But what more is when I started to commit to trying a suicide attempt, it was my conscience. If I did anything, because when I was younger, I got really involved into the church and a spirituality. And I honestly believed that God was taking care of me. Now, when I did something wrong, what I perceived as wrong, even it could be lying,
mm-hmm.
it's something that's simple or stealing. Then I felt like I wasn't worthy of even God's love.
Wow.
And then the suicide attempts would start, and even as an adult. And I think when I think about the soldiers, some of them were commanded being in the military, you have to follow command. And the things they was asked to do, those images in their mind, they could not erase them. that, can you imagine shooting a pregnant woman or a small child, and you can see the begging in the eye, please don't do this, please don't hurt me, don't hurt my children. And your commanding officer is telling you, go ahead, you do it or you will be punished. And so you do it following your command. When you come home and that officer is not there anymore, and these images come playing back in your mind, or when you're dreaming and you can see that pleading, and please don't, and you keep feeling it, the guilt, the shame, it's agonizing.
You know,
and
Catherine,
yes?
That's such an important thing, because you keep in mind, this is not just the United States Army, it's armies all over the world.
Yes. Yes.
It's everywhere that we send the military.
Yes.
And the reason that we're on Pacifica Radio, and this is WBAI, because we objected to all of that killing.
Yes.
You know, and you're very wise. Let me ask you something in all your wisdom. Mm-hmm. See, you've gotten through, huh?
Yes. Only because, now, I went into a rehab because I kept the drinking, like you were saying, and I went into the rehab, and in the rehab, I find out that because before I came in there, I went to a ministry, got involved with this.
I know you said that.
Deacon that was becoming a minister, and he gave me HIV. And so they thought I was going to fall all apart, because I found out when I was in the rehab. But I felt so loved by God. I felt so loved by God. And to this day, they kind of say, well, it's not affecting you. I've never seen something like that before. It's because for the first time in my life, I truly feel loved. I truly feel, and it took the alcoholism, it took the shame, the suicide, the deep depressions that I was feeling. All gone.
Catherine, thank you. Thank you very much for teaching
us.
Thank you so much for teaching us. Yes, you know, we do wait for that moment. The moment I think we wait for is, I think we wait for the moment when we could love ourselves.
Yes.
And when we get to the moment.
And that's when I began to love myself.
That's right.
It starts showing me going through this spiritual awakening. That's what I call it. I started feeling love for myself. I started to see the good in myself, that he put me here as a special person. Out of all the sperm, I made it. And he meant for me to be here.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for calling in. I want to take one more call.
Okay.
Thank you for being with us. 212-209-2900. 11-11 today. You know, today's 11-11. Next year, it's going to be 11-11 on November 11th. It's going to be 11-11-11. And then at 11 hours and 11 minutes into the first, twice that day, we're going to have quite a celebration. Lots of ones. 212-2, that's the way I think. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing? I'm doing
good. Who is this?
Good. My name is Joshua.
Hello, Joshua.
How you doing? I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been thinking about the topic, and, you know, for me, shame is like a feeling of powerlessness to overcome challenges. For me, it's been a financial challenge, marital challenge, family challenges, especially when I look at my condition. I'm intelligent, I'm educated, I'm healthy, so it seems like these things should be in order for me, but they're not necessarily in the order that I want them to be. And there's an inner feeling of a little powerlessness. And sometimes even trying to blame, you know, other people for this condition.
Sure. It's such a natural thing when you feel shame to try to turn it on somebody else.
And that's caused challenges, you know, especially in my marriage, you know, because I'm going to point the finger at my wife and say, it's your fault. Or, you know, finances, saying, oh, you know, if I could just get a better job with more money. But the thing that has helped me overcome, you know, these is finding a spiritual practice that really, you know, points me inward and helps me to understand that I'm 100% responsible for what's going on and how I can respond to my environment. And I've always kind of understood this intellectually, you know, but I finally found something that has empowered my life to understand this spiritually and in a very expansive way. And when things come up now, you know, when I still have challenges financially and in my marriage, I'm able to overcome these challenges. And actually, what I'm being taught is that these challenges are really a representation of my karma and an opportunity for me to grow and go beyond these challenges. So I'm being taught to embrace these challenges.
Right. You know, that's kind
really,
of a beautiful
it's really
thing.
Powerful.
Kind of a beautiful thing you're saying, Joshua. I spoke to a man earlier today who told me, he said, so I have the same problem over and over again with my wife. Mm-hmm. He says, I don't know when it's going to get better. I said, but you seem to react different every time. So each time you face these challenges, you grow from handling them better.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you're on
That's
your
right.
way up, Joshua, so I really yeah. appreciate it. And I appreciate it. I'm glad that you found this place because you're going to be a wonderful teacher.
Yes, and I actually am a teacher.
Yeah, I'm sure you, I mean, you must be great.
Yeah, and it's helping my teachers.
What age group do you teach?
I teach middle school students, eighth grade students.
Thank
God. And that's a very challenging time.
What a wonderful thing to have a leader like you, somebody who has been through the tough times, who knows the tough times and finds a way to find his own center. This is really, to me, inspires me. Joshua, thank you for being on this planet.
Amon, thank you. I love you. Yeah. I appreciate you. Whenever I get a chance, I listen. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks so much for being with us. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I will be back. Oh, no, I won't be back on Tuesday. Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, which will be my normal 2 days, they're doing a special fundraising at Pacifica Radio, so I won't be here. The following Tuesday, I will be here. So if you miss me, go to the archives, listen in, or go to Facebook and send me a letter. I'm going to be putting on some special things on Facebook just for all of you for the interim times. But do send me a note. You beautiful people, thanks so much for being with us. Here's from an old friend of mine, Johnny Griffin, a little special music. So, Armand@thepositivemind.com. Here's a little music. I'll be back with you in a couple of weeks.